Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Harris, your host. I invite fascinating humans from all walks of life to share their wisdom and unpack their mindsets and formulas for growth. On the show today, we have a short episode featuring another of the favourite parts of my interview with Brian Biro. For the most part, on the show, we will be now releasing short episodes covering usually one main topic to improve your mindset game. If you want access to the whole interviews, they will be available for free using my new app, Thinkify, where you can, of course, also engage with me and the episode guests in the app, as it is a social podcast player for fun times. Anyway, on to today. Brian is an expert on mindset and coaching and has written over 15 books on the subject. My personal favourite is his book on the ROI of kindness. That's the return of investment of kindness, by the way. And in general, this is just a concept I talk about a lot on this show. I genuinely believe that being kind to others is just in your own self-interest for both peace of mind and happiness, but also your success and opportunities. Anyway, in this episode, we talk about kindness and really focus in on how to build successful outcomes for yourself by where you're focusing your energy. Brian has a great theory around how where we focus our attention and emotions reflects on the results that we get in life, and it's a real game changer for just leveling up your mindsets. So without further rambling, let's get into this short and sharp focused conversation to level up your game with the most wonderful Brian Biro.
There's a principle that I teach and that's been around in psychology forever that is called the Pygmalion effect. And the Pygmalion effect says that our thoughts, our beliefs, and our expectations, whether of others or ourselves, are magnetic. That as we think about somebody, not only do we see more of that, but here's what's fascinating, especially depending upon the level of our influence on other people, what they think of us, we're actually moving them in the direction of those thoughts, beliefs, and expectations. A researcher from Harvard by the name of Robert Rosenthal asked the question, is the Pygmalion effect real or is it just convenient? You know, just some explanation and it's really not real. So what he did was he went into 25 elementary schools in the United States. So he went to 25 different schools and went into the first grade classroom, so six-year-olds. And he told the teachers and only the teachers that he had developed a test, an examination for first graders, which would tell the teachers which of the students in their class were what he called spurters. Now, a spurter was a child with incredible potential, but who had not used it yet, had not accessed it. So they had this, all this unused potential. And this test would identify for the teachers which of those kids were spurters. So he administered the test to 500 different children, 25 different schools, rural schools, urban schools, gathered up the tests. And a week later, he came back and he told the teachers the results. He said, Sam's a spurter, Mary's a spurter, Jim's a spurter. Told the teachers which of the kids had scored as spurters. But guess what? It was a big fake. He had never graded anything. What he had done was he had given the kids a very basic first grade intelligence test, gathered all the papers, never looked at them, and burned them. So completely at random, he had told the teachers that these particular kids were the spurters. Well, guess what happened? In over 97% of the children that were randomly picked as spurters, they spurted. They rose to the top of the class and they stayed there academically through their academic career. This is a long-term study. It was a brilliant study. It proved that our thoughts, beliefs, and expectations are magnetic because who changed? The teachers. The teachers didn't look at Sam as Sam anymore. They saw Sam the spurter and they taught them differently. And Sam, it was a brilliant study, but guess what? He got sued for it. And guess who sued him? The parents of the other kids sued him because the teachers taught those kids as if they weren't spurters. And so when you understand that Pygmalion effect, what it says is that whether you're a leader in a small business working with people, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a parent, whether you're a friend, that your thoughts, beliefs, and expectations of others and definitely of yourself, because as much as you're a Pygmalion to others, you're a Pygmalion to yourself. So do you look for your weaknesses constantly or do you look to develop your strengths? What do you focus on in life? Do you focus more on worrying about what will go wrong or creating what will go right? That Pygmalion effect says that when I work with people and I look at myself, I'm going to look more for those possibilities rather than limits. I'm going to look for the qualities and characteristics that are really outstanding because the more I think about them, the more they'll grow. When I was a U.S. swimming coach, which was my first career, probably the most important thing I had to learn, and give you one really, really fun example. I had one young girl named Allison, who I coached for 8 years. And perpetually, she was a butterfly swimmer. And for 8 straight years, Allison had quick speed, but she always seemed to die in the last 25 meters of her races. She would fall apart at the end and kids would pass her. Well, for 8 years, I was a terrible Pygmalion. I loved the kid. I just wanted her best for her. But I kept saying, Sam, you'll crack up about this because you have a growth mindset. I'd say to her, you know, Allison, one of these days you're not going to die. All right. And off she'd go down to the warm down pool thinking about not dying. Now, if I say to you, don't think of number 3, what happens? Three jumps in your head. So we just had the same thing happen over and over and over again. One day I became a different kind of Pygmalion simply by chance. We were at the best meet she had ever qualified for, the Junior Olympics. In her warm-up sprint, she looked sensational. And instead of saying, one of these days you're not going to die, Allison, I simply said to her that morning after her sprint, I said, Allison, when you swim your 100-meter butterfly and you get to the last 25 meters, I want you to envision and pretend that you're swimming the same 25-meter sprint you did just now when you did your best time. You remember how awesome you felt? Her eyes lit up, all right? She goes, yeah. Well, she so obliterated her personal best. She moved from being the last qualifier in the 100-meter butterfly in her age group that year to winning the silver medal in the finals later that night. She improved her best time up 12 seconds in a 100-meter butterfly. And it made me break through and realize how many kids have I been coaching backwards because of the way I saw them not being a positive Pygmalion. So we never have to say one of these days you're going to die. We can say, hey, picture this incredible finish. We never have to compare our children to each other or other people. Why don't you act more like your brother? And all of a sudden you've created the good one and the bad one. And the bad one sees themselves that way for the rest of their lives. And so we want to be really responsible and passionate about the impact that we have as Pygmalions on the people that matter to us.
Yeah, wow, that was powerful. Sometimes I feel like, because I'm like the CEO of a company, that I need to sort of make sure that people know what they're doing wrong. And like when things are like working and ticking over, like you don't sort of focus on that much, but you're like, wait, this is the amazing strength that you bring. This is why you're such a good, important component of the company. These are all your amazing qualities. It's like celebrating those things and sort of helping them do more of the things, which is why they're here anyway, and not focusing on the things that like, I never expected them to be good at is like obviously where I should be doing more of. And I'm certainly trying. And I think that actually has been something I've done a lot more of over the past month, which has caused a bit of a radical shift of being like, wait, this person's amazing at running meetings and like they should be running more meetings. They freaking love doing that. It's like they're calling, great. And now we have so much better meetings and stuff rather than them being in the corner and be like, you're being a shit person in this meeting because you're not helping at all. It's like, let him run the thing. And yeah, stuff goes so much better.
Yeah, it kind of leads into talking about the three controllables that are the foundation of breakthrough leadership, because it really leads right into the first one. And that first one is called Shape Your Future. And that's about vision. All breakthroughs start with vision. You got to see it before you can be it. And the foundational principle at the core of shaping your future is what you focus on is what you create. What you focus on is what you create. It's not what you get. It's what you create. And I'll give you a fun little example. I have a 4-year-old grandson. His name is Augie. And Augie is the coolest guy ever. He's got this big grin all the time. And he's also Mario Andretti on his little tricycle. He's like a million miles an hour, pedals going really fast. Just turned 4 years old. Well, he's so good on that tricycle that very soon he's going to get a 2-wheeler bike, a real bike. And the big day will come. And anybody who's had children, you had this day if they got a bike. Mom and dad will be out there. They're going to be holding on to that back fender. They're going to get him up on that bike. He's going to put his hands on the handlebars. He's going to put his feet on the pedals. He's going to put his tongue out for balance. And he's going to start riding. And they're going to be pushing him. And he's wobbling. And he's shaking. But he's doing it. And mom and dad let him go. And he's riding down the sidewalk. Way to go, Augie. Unfortunately, right in front of him on the sidewalk is a great big rock. What does Augie look at? The rock. What happens next? Wham! He hits that rock like it's magnetic. He falls over. He scrapes his elbow. He walks by his dad like he's cool. He goes up to mom and goes, I'm going to die, mom. Okay, so now it's 2 weeks later. Same little boy, same bike, no tongue out for balance anymore. He doesn't need it. He's got bike riding down. Whipping down the same sidewalk. Boppity, 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 bop. Bigger rock. What happens now? He goes around it. But what goes around it first? Not the bike. What goes around it first is his vision. What Augie has learned is that what you focus on is what you create, and what you resist persists. And he recognizes at that moment that he has a choice to stay focused on the obstacle, focused on the weakness, focused on what I don't want, or shift my vision in that moment towards what I do want. All right? And we all have that choice. What you focus on is what you create. Now, does it do Augie any good to pretend there's no rock? There's no rock, there's no rock. No, that's worse. He could really hurt himself. But what we do have a choice is, I see the rock, we'll find our way around it. And in life, we're going to run into some rocks. They're going to be there. One is called COVID. It's a rock. What are we going to do? How are we going to adjust our way to make our way beyond it? Sometimes we make a mistake. We have to look at that mistake. There's the rock, and create a new direction. So the foundation of shaping your future is to embrace this new idea that what you focus on is what you create. And if you feel yourself moving towards the rock, you catch yourself. And we're not going to be perfect, but the more you practice it, the more automatic it will become when the obstacles, the barriers, the potential fears come up, that you have more choice and you can move around it. So the first controllable of the three controllables that at the foundation of breakthrough leadership is to shape your future, that what you focus on is what you create.
Yeah, it's really powerful. And so I was thinking, like, I had some similar issues skiing when I was trying to do tricks and things, and I found that, like, if I could lead with like my head, like when I tried to do 360s, I was just really failing because I was kind of still hesitant about whether I'd manage it. So I was still looking in the same way. And so my head was just like stopping my body from turning. But I was like, if I just move my head 360, like the rest of my body just follows and stuff. And it was just really interesting that, like, basically whatever tricks I want to do, I just need to move my head around to get it. Like the rest of me would just like follow it. It was really funny. And yeah, I just kind of had that.
What a beautiful parallel. And as you know, in exports, or any sports, real top champions, what do they do before a big trick? Or what do they do before a big event? They visualize it. They visualize themselves doing it the best way possible. There was a study done at University of Chicago many years ago, and they had three groups. It was all about free throw shooting in basketball. I think each group was 100 participants. And the first group, for 30 days, practiced shooting 100 free throws a day, actually making the shots. The second group shot no free throws, but visualized making 100 free throws a day. The third group just went about their normal business, all right? Well, guess which group ended up actually 30 days later having the most improvement in their free throw shooting? The visualizers, more than those who actually did the physical practice. And the reason was, you think about it, the visualizers visualized themselves making every free throw, not missing any of them. The actual practitioners could easily do what you just said, turn their head the wrong way, because when they miss, that they start to feel that feeling of missing, all right? And so it shows the power of where we start breakthrough improvement is we got to see ourselves the way we want to be. Focus more on what you want rather than what you don't want, because either way, what you focus on is what you create.
Wow, that's crazy. And yeah, it certainly relates to like the last points that you're making around like your thoughts, beliefs, and expectations, and that drives what happens. Know what you worry about, or if it's wrong, like you're more likely to kind of have the thing go wrong. And if you focus on people's weaknesses, you're kind of more likely to bring out their weaknesses and make them panic about like their weaknesses and things. And certainly I found that was, I've had some people sort of give me, oh, something you're really bad at this. And then whenever I'm doing that thing, I'm kind of like panic because I'm in front of everyone. Whereas like, if I wasn't thinking of it in that way, I'd just be like willing to like try and do a better job of it. And I think again, with like relationships as well, if you go into it thinking the person, like not trusting them or thinking that maybe they'll cheat or something, you can end up actually kind of causing some of these problems because if after 6 months you're still not trusting this person, the person's like, well, like they're not really feeling very stable in the relationship either. They're more likely to sort of just go and do other things because of they feel that they have that trust from you. It's very strange how we can create these things, and like the visions that you have is what happens.
So true. So true. Beautiful examples.
Today, I'm pleased to be talking about the sponsor, LinkedIn Talent Solutions. Because growing your business takes more than offering a popular product or service. It's essential to have the right people in place to ensure your company operates smoothly and has the potential to expand. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the best candidates for free. And it's been really useful for me to like find an array of people that I wouldn't necessarily be able to access from my own network. And you can get started by posting your job for free to reach LinkedIn's network of 740 million professionals. You can fill out targeted screening questions to get your role in front of the most qualified candidates with the experience, skills, and motivation that you need, and use simple tools to filter and prioritize the top candidates you'd like to interview. So LinkedIn Jobs will help you hire the right person for your role, and your first job post is free. Just visit linkedin.com/growth. Again, that's linkedin.com/growth, G-R-O-W-T-H, to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions do apply.
Well, cool. So now we can go into the second part.
The second one is to energize and engage your team. Now, obviously, before you can energize and engage the people around you, you need to energize and engage yourself. And why is energy so important? Why is it so important to your career? Why is it so important to your relationships? Why is it so important to your health? And there's really two key reasons. And again, the foundation is your energy is your choice, even though many people don't think of it that way. Many people think of their energy kind of like they think of the weather. It's like, sure hope the weather's great for our family outing. And sometimes we kind of think about our energy that way. I hope I have enough energy to make it through this crazy day. Hope I have enough energy to get through this ridiculously busy week. But our energy is a choice, and that's a controllable. And the reason it's so important, two reasons. First reason is all about what I call the WOO, which is called the woo, which incidentally, really fun to say, the woo. The woo is the window of opportunity. The woo is the window of opportunity, which is, I want to suggest, is every precious moment. And what I mean by that is, you never know if the next person you'll meet today, if that person might become a lifelong friend, as you didn't know it when you met your lifelong friend. You never know if the next time you talk to your flatmate, your teammate, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your spouse, your customer, if the next thing you say in the next conversation may be so on target for what they didn't see with their own eyes, but you saw it and then you said it. And when you said it, you seized that window of opportunity, that woo. And because of something you said, somebody's life got better. You never know. And so the first reason why energy is so crucial is energy puts you in a position to seize more woos. Have you ever noticed when you have energy, how much more alert you are to possibility? When you have energy, adversity doesn't seem quite as adverse. So the first reason why energy is so important is it puts you in that position to be available, alert to those windows of opportunity that are almost always around us. The second reason why energy is so important, and this is probably the most important reason, to your children, no matter their age, no matter how long as you draw breath, to your boss, to your customers, to your teammates, to anyone who you really care about having relationship with, your energy is your example. People won't remember that much of what you say, no matter how well you say it, and they'll never forget your energy. They get your energy before you've opened your mouth. They get your energy after you've closed your mouth. They get your energy over the phone. They haven't even seen your face. They get your energy the way I send emails. To me, email stands for energy mail, not electronic mail. So to everyone we touch, our energy is our example. So I like to help people go on what I call an ETP to begin to seize the woo and choose a different level of energy. An ETP, Sam, is an energy transformation program. It's a way to work on your energy in a practical, not hugely time-consuming way to elevate your consistent energy. And it's real simple. It starts with a 10-point energy scale. You need a context to work on your energy. So on a 10-point energy scale, one is comatose. 10 is a child on Christmas morning. 10 is the way you feel when you just nailed that ski jump that you really had been working on and you just landed it. It was like better than you could have dreamed of. So now that we've created the context of the 10-point energy scale in order to work in our energy transformation program on elevating our energy, here's a trillion-dollar question. When you think about that 10-point energy scale from 1 to 10, where are you living your life? Whoa, that's a great question. Are you living at level 6, level 7? Wherever you're living, unless your answer was 99.6 on the 10-point scale, then the next question is, how can I change that? How can I improve that? How can I raise that number? Because when I ask the question, where are you living on the 10-point scale? Suppose you thought, I've been living at a 7. What is that 7? In actual terms, that 7 is nothing more than an energy habit. It's the way you've set up your world in two key ways that kind of puts you into that 7 compartment on the 10-point scale. And there's two choice areas that absolutely change your energy that can elevate you from 6.5 to 7.3 to 8.2 to 9.5. The first is to change the way you move. If you want to move your life, you got to move yourself. In other words, energy is created by the way that you move. Anytime you've given your best presentation, you've been your most creative, you've been your most alert, you have moved your body in very specific, different ways than when you've not been your best. your body line and posture, your facial expression, your eye position, and your breathing. Now, Sam, I've said this to some people before, and I go, Brian, if I had more energy, I'd move more. Ah, move more and you'll have more energy. That's where the choice resides, is to add movement to your life. I bet everybody watching your podcast, listening to your podcast, knows somebody who amazes them, because at a very advanced age, this elderly person has incredible energy. And though I don't know who anybody's thinking about, I bet I know two important things about them. One, that aged person with his incredible energy is one of your heroes. You just admire the heck out of them. And number two, they keep moving. We don't get older, we just stop moving. I'm actually 92 years old, but I just can't stop moving all the time. So again, if you want to move your life, you got to move yourself. That's the first key. The second key to elevating your energy is to focus on purpose. Whenever you're full of purpose, you're full of energy. Kind of think about it. When you get to do what you love to do, it doesn't matter how much sleep you had. It doesn't matter how you've been feeling. When you get to do what you love to do, you have all the energy you could want. But think about what happens to your energy when you lose sight of your purpose. It's like you just go through the motions. It's like somebody puts a pin in that balloon of purpose and that energy. So here's a simple way to put yourself on the path to living with more purpose. And that is, every morning when you wake up, start your day by asking this one question. If you want to, you can laminate a little card and put it up in the shower or something. But ask yourself, what am I truly grateful about in my life? What am I truly grateful about in my life? What you're grateful about will focus you on your priorities. Your priorities will always lead you to your purpose. So by focusing on changing your movement and elevating your level of purpose by asking about what you're grateful about on your ETP, Energy Transformation Program, you do that for 30 days, you move from 6.5 to 7.3 to 8.2 to 9.5, and your work, your health, your relationships, your joy will rise with it. So that's how you energize and engage yourself. And again, energy is contagious. And as you rise on that scale, the people that matter to you will rise with you.
Wow. That was super cool. I'm feeling like I need to like jump up and down right now. I'm like, yes, energy. Also, I just did a run, but I'm like, I'm going to go for another run right now. It's great. Yeah, pumped. Nice. Thanks for that. I was going to buy a standing desk, but I didn't, which I was super annoyed about. I'm not very happy about my amount of time sitting down, but I've got like a station that kind of rises. So I'm trying to do more standing, and then for as many of my meetings as possible, I'm trying to take some walking and stuff at the moment, just to like keep myself moving.
Absolutely. Yeah. I encourage people, you know, we get into the cellular crunch and we stay on our phones for a long time in this bent down position. I really encourage people, never spend more than 10 or 15 minutes without getting up, moving your arms and legs, taking a couple of rich breaths, opening your eyes wider, smiling, even if you don't feel like smiling, just changing your physiology rapidly and dramatically for 10 seconds. And suddenly you'll feel at least a 1-point rise on that 10-point scale. That's how powerful a shift in movement can be. You know, when I was writing my books, I've written 15 books. Probably the most important tactic I used in writing my books was running. When I ran, I got the newest ideas. And I never tried to do that, but I was physically moving and ideas would pop into my head out of seemingly nowhere. Think about, Sam, how many people get great ideas in the shower and why? Because they're moving. They're moving that soap around. They're moving their arms and legs. And we get these great ideas. Energy is directly proportional to your level of movement. So you want to move your life, move yourself.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I would say within reason that I have done some like really long runs and then just spent the rest of the afternoon just completely pooped and was like, probably shouldn't try and do like I think 30 kilometers, I think is my limit.
There's definitely a time for rest and a time to just let the world go for a little while. That's part of energy as well. But that's also a choice.
Oh, yeah. Sleeping, very important. I think David Goggins talks about sort of the importance of rest and taking it, but not resting when he hasn't scheduled it. So it's like, okay, if I'm going to do like, I plan my week of workouts, I'm going to do them. And if like one morning I'm feeling tired, but it's not my day to rest, I don't rest. I just have to like bring my energy and stuff, and just having that mental resilience to really just like force it, I think is quite good. Whereas otherwise you can kind of get in the cycle of, oh, I don't quite feel like it today and stuff. And I think energy comes kind of in the same way as you spoke about, you know, you focus on what you want to create in the vision. And like when I was running, I was training for an ultramarathon. I started doing 15 kilometers a day for weeks. And like the first few weeks, it was really hard. I was like, oh my God, I've got the energy. But like within 3 weeks, I would do 15 kilometers. I still want to carry on running. I was like, I don't finish. I've got way more in the tank. And that's the point where I was able to do like ultramarathons then. When you kind of focus on like the success part, like you'll get there. So yeah, I really like that. And I'm really interested to like analyze my own energy scale and try and do that. Cause I noticed such a difference of like the meetings that I turn up to where I'm like, boom, yeah, guys, we're going to do so much. It's going to be awesome. And everyone goes like leaves and they're super happy. And other days where I'm a bit tired, I'm like, yeah, so we could do this with the company today. And, just know what's going on with that thing. Right, well, whatever. Yeah, it's not good. Like, that's a bad day. It kicks everyone off wrong. And then there's people like don't remember that much of what you say. I mean, I'm making a lot of notes right now, but I'm still just going to remember that you had good energy, really. And I have to look at your notes whenever I actually want to tell anyone specific of what you told me. But it's, maybe I think I'll probably remember some of the stories. But yeah, like, energy is just so important for how you're around people. And I think also relates into kindness and stuff as well. I think being kind really gives you more energy. And like you've written a whole book about return on investment of kindness.
It truly does. My most recent book is called The ROI of Kindness. And I wrote it because I feel like never in my life have I been more passionate in the belief that we need to start to be kind to one another again, that there's more separation than I've seen in my lifetime. And it's a pretty long lifetime so far. We all want kindness in our life. We want to be kind. We want to be treated with kindness. But I wanted to write a book that pointed out that kindness is not just a nice thing, but that kindness works. Kindness works on a business level. Organizations that create what I call a KVP, a kindness value proposition, have incredibly lower turnover, are incredibly more profitable, and are every single time more highly thought of by their customers. They have higher ratings. The companies that you admire have built kindness into their culture. And the book has a lot of research about organizations that get this and how differentiated they are because they built a kindness culture. And the other thing I wanted to do in the book, and it's a short little fun little book, was I wanted to help people understand that a little bit more of how you deliver kindness in the most important ways. Because it's one thing to say, hey, I want to be kind, but how do you do that? How do you actually do that? Because kindness matters the most in some of the tougher situations to be kind. It's easy to be kind, but how kind are you when people are not kind back? How are you when people are scared or hurt or there's misunderstandings? How kind are you when you disagree? Can you disagree without being disagreeable? So I talk about the decision we all can make in our businesses and our lives to be what I call a CKO, which is a chief kindness officer. And it's a choice. You can move right into that corner office right away. And I talk about 7 habits of highly effective CKOs. And they're just ways to deliver kindness in ways that really, really cannot be shaken, that really work. I'll just give one of them. So to me, the most important way to deliver kindness, I call it the gift, and it's to be fully present. Now, what does that mean? When you're fully present, 100% of your mind, body, and spirit is with the person you're with where they are now. So here's a great question. How does it make you feel when someone you really wish to be present with you is not present with you? How does it make you feel when somebody you want to connect with is obviously more interested in looking at their cell phone than they are at really connecting? Well, for some people, it makes them angry. For others, it just makes them sad. But for every person I've ever known, even the most confident people, if there's somebody we want to be present with us and they're not, it makes us feel worthless. It makes us feel insignificant and unimportant. It's the ultimate unkindness. Because I believe that our role as breakthrough leaders, what the whole thing is about, our job is to help people know they're important. The people that we love, the people that we serve, the people that we care about, to know they're important. When people feel important, they rise in spirit. And when people feel unimportant, insignificant, they fall away. They want to leave. They give up. They become lost. And so the ultimate and foundational way to help people know they're important is that gift, simply being fully present. And I want to give you one really powerful example, because it doesn't do any good to have this idea in your head. It's got to be in your heart. The greatest gift of my life was given to me by 2 of my greatest teachers, my daughters, Kelsey and Jenna, when they were 8 and 3 years old. And when they were 8 and 3, I had been teaching this stuff for a long time, but there's a big difference between knowing what to do and doing what you know. And I was at a point in my life, we had actually moved from a big city to a little town so that I would be a more fully present dad. That when I wasn't on the road, and I was on the road a ton, that I would be there to get my daughters ready for school. I'd be there after school to help them with their homework, take them to dance practice. I'd be there for family dinners, and I'd be there to tuck them in at night. I knew what to do, but I wasn't doing what I knew because I was so caught up in my own stuff that I wasn't present for them. Well, one night, my two daughters, I should have been tucking them in and giving them a cuddle and telling them how much I love them, reading them a story. Instead, I was in my office about to pick up my phone to go through voicemails. And I felt my daughters behind me. I didn't hear them, but I felt them. And I turned and there they were. And they ran to me. And my youngest, Jenna, was three. She crawled up in my lap, got under my arm, kind of like a golden retriever saying, pet me, pet me. Carol and my daughter, Kelsey, came up, put her arms around me. And they looked at me and I go, girls, what are you doing? I love you so much. And they said, Daddy, can we ask you something before we go to sleep tonight? And I said, sure, you can ask me anything. And Sam, they grabbed my heart and they shook it. And they changed my whole focus in life. And they said, Daddy, we just want to know, do you love your phone more than you love us? Oh, I felt the blade go in deep. You know, Emerson said, what you do scream so loudly, I can't hear a word you're saying. And I was living my life as if my phone was a higher priority than my daughters. Well, I will tell you, I tucked them in that night and I never missed another night when I was home after that. The next morning, I got them up. I got them ready for school. I brought them to school. I never missed another morning after that. That day, I changed the whole direction of my scheduling for what I do in life. From that day forward, I would never do more than 7 events a month, no matter what you pay me. And so I would be home at least half the month. And I thought I was doing it for them, Sam. Do you know that every dimension of our lives improved with the decision to be more fully present? Because here's the truth. You don't get less done being present. You get more done because you're fully there. Fully there in your relationships, fully there in your tasks, fully there in your purpose. And so if there's one thing I would wish to offer to your audience more than anything else, it's to really, really get clear about what it says to everyone around you when you're fully present for them. And a simple way to start, inch by inch, anything's a cinch. So pick out one person in your life who for the next 30 days is a part of your energy transformation program, you commit to be more fully present with. Now, it doesn't mean you have to spend more time with them. You may actually have less time. But when you're with them, shut off the telephone, shut off the television, ask instead of tell, and then actually listen before you formulate what your response will be. And you do that for a few days with that one person, they're going to look at you different. They're going, you've been working out. You are looking good. And as you become present with that one, it'll move to the next till it becomes your present habit. So I love to end that focus with this idea, which says the past is history, the future a mystery, the gift is now. That's why we call it the present.
Yeah, I love that quote. And that whole story was amazing. Thanks so much for the insight into your personal life there. And yeah, I think it can take, like we said, like the really low moments where you're like, shit, I've done this so wrong. Like just then to then like build a much better version of yourself. And yeah, hearing that from your kids must have been like so powerful to make you realize the importance of being present. It's a great story. Thanks. And I mean, I could talk about kindness for the rest of the podcast, but we still haven't hit the third point, I believe. Although it seems to be...
It's the ultimate kindness. It's the most important way we can deliver kindness in any moment. Well, that was really... We actually did, because the third control that is, that's the foundation. We kind of ventured into kindness, but the foundation of building people, teams, and relationships starts with being fully present.
Amazing. Cool. Thank you so much.
Sam, it's been a joy. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Thank you so much for all of the different lessons and stories. As you've been very welcome here on the show. I think you've given so much value for the listeners and myself. I've loved making so many notes. And yeah, if any of the listeners want to find your books, I guess any good bookstore.
Well, thank you so much. And I appreciate so much what you do. Well, probably the easiest way to find all I do is just go to my website. And it's just brianbiro.com, BRIANBIRO.com. And that's got information on my speaking, both virtual and live, and it's got all my books.
Perfect. Well, there we go. Thank you for being on the show and have a great rest of the day. Stay safe with the coronavirus and nothing silly. Keep writing books.
Thank you so much, Sam. Carpe woo. Bye-bye now.
Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me @samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.